This is Lester Smith, substituting for Cedric Foster, reporting to you from Boston. I'll have my commentary on today's news in just a moment. Secretary of State Dean Acheson today flatly rejected a proposal by Senator Vandenberg of Michigan that Congress provide only stopgap arms aid to Western Europe until next year. Acheson told the Michigan senator, who has been a leading supporter of the bipartisan foreign policy, that such a course would be little more than a gesture. And in an obvious reference to Russia, Acheson told the Senate Foreign Relations and Armed Service Committees, in dealing with the forces with which we are dealing, you gain no advantage by assuming an attitude. We must deal in realities. The sooner we fill the vacuum of military weakness in Europe, the better it will be for our own security. Vandenberg contended that the administration's $1.45 billion arms program sets a pattern for the military defense of Western Europe before the council to be formed under the North Atlantic Treaty has come into being and set up a defense committee to make military plans. He complained that the United States is going ahead without consulting its North Atlantic allies. He said that he favors instead an interim program, which will show clearly that this country intends to furnish arms, but will not preclude further joint planning. Acheson favors furnishing military aid while the strategic plans are being drawn under the treaty. Acheson told the combined Senate committees today that Congress should approve foreign arms aid, because the United States is open to attack on its own territory to a greater extent than ever before. He told the senators that the Western European allies of the United States are now so weak in military power that their situation is an invitation to any would-be aggressor to strike. The first line of defense is still in Europe, but our European allies do not have the military capacity to hold that line. The shield behind which we marshaled our forces to strike decisive blows in two world wars for the common cause no longer exists. Acheson said that speedy approval of the administration's arms program is imperative in order to remove Western Europe's fear and to erase the conditions that might encourage an aggressor to resort to military force. In an unexpectedly tough statement, Acheson flatly accused the Soviet Union of using its arms to intimidate and coerce smaller nations. He outlined a four-point summary of the rearmament proposal to put it in what he called the proper perspective. First, Western Europe is now an organism with a soft shell, and as such, it invites attack from the predatory. It must develop a hard shell of adequate defense forces to discourage such an attack. A realistic understanding of the nature of the struggle being waged in Europe warns us that we must consider the ever-present possibility of aggression and take effective action to forestall it. Second, even though our defenses in this country may be strong, we are only partly protected as long as the European members of the Atlantic community are woefully weak. Third, the greatest danger to world peace today is the possibility that an aggressor in an ill-considered attempt at easy conquest might launch an attack on an intended victim which would draw other forces into the conflict and precipitate an all-out war. And fourth, we all know which nation has frustrated the search for collective security in the United Nations and has continued to use force as an instrument of national policy in violation of the principles and provisions of the Charter. It is the responsibility of the peace-loving members of the United Nations to meet this primary threat to the principle of collective security realistically and unequivocally. Acheson charged that Russia is maintaining a huge military force behind the Iron Curtain, the largest armed force in the peacetime history of any country, while its occupation during the war denuded the European governments of their arms. The pressure of the large military forces, maintained in readiness at all times behind the Iron Curtain, is the club in the closet of every communist government in Europe, and there is little effort being made to keep that weapon concealed. He also urged speedy action on the bill, saying that much will be gained and nothing will be lost by acting now. Acheson emphasized that the planes, the tanks, guns, and other equipment provided in the bill will be delivered without delay, ready for use if necessary. Since the present weakness invites the danger of war, and since future planning cannot impair the validity of this program, it would be foolish to risk the possible consequences of delay. The secretary declared that the leaders of totalitarian states will cooperate with the Western powers only when they are convinced that the free nations of the world are too strong to be overcome by external aggression or internal subversion. We shall stand in criminal neglect, and the ideals of the United Nations will be seriously jeopardized if we do not do all that we can by both moral and material means to bring home to the Russian leaders the wisdom of leading their peoples toward world cooperation and world peace. Acheson said that both the will to fight and the ability to fight in Western Europe will be increased by giving our allies the means with which to fight. He went along with the administration's revised arms bill, eliminating the previously requested powers, which would have permitted the president to arm any nation he thinks necessary. But Acheson urged Congress to give those who will execute the program some small degree of flexibility in determining the amount of aid to be supplied to different countries covered by the revised bill. It would not be wise to prescribe too rigid a statutory framework for the execution of the policy. If the limitations were too stringent, the executive might find that he was constrained from taking the very action which some unexpected situation demanded in the national interest. The secretary raised and answered four questions as to what the practical effects of the arms aid policy are likely to be. One, would it strengthen or weaken the security of the North Atlantic community? Strengthening the defenses of European allies would make them less vulnerable to internal threats to their security and more capable of resisting aggression against their frontiers. Two, would it strengthen or weaken the security of the United States? Events have proved that our national security requires the preservation of the independence and integrity of the free nations of Europe. Number three, would military assistance strengthen or weaken the chances of world peace? The greatest danger to peace is the possibility of an aggressor attempting an easy conquest, and arms aid is designed to discourage such an effort. And number four, would the program strengthen or weaken the United Nations? By strengthening free nations against the dangers of aggression, arms aid will hasten the day when war will be abandoned. I'll be back in half a minute. Meanwhile, here is your announcer. High school seniors, plan now for the future. Investigate the many outstanding opportunities open to young men with the United States Marines. A variety of duties in many parts of the world makes this one of today's most interesting jobs. And men, no other military group in the world commands the respect or has more pride and spirit than the Marines. So, if you're 18 years of age and physically fit, consult your Marine Corps office today for details of life with the United States Marines. Now back to Lester Smith. While Secretary of State Acheson was trying to prove to members of Congress that arms aid to Europe was necessary to help keep the peace, other groups who hoped to be able to maintain the stability of the continent through the federalization of much of Europe also made preliminary moves. In Washington, Senator Kefauver of Tennessee, who wants seven democratic nations to join in a federal union something like our own union of 48 states, said today that Congress is far behind the people on this subject. On behalf of a group of 20 senators, Kefauver has introduced a resolution asking the president to invite Canada, Britain, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg to a federal convention to explore how far they can apply to themselves the principles of free federal union within the framework of the United Nations. The sponsors see this convention as comparable to the constitutional convention held by the 13 original American states in 1787. The Tennessee senator said that during the 2 weeks since the resolution was introduced, interest has been increasing tremendously all over the country. When he was asked whether he thinks the seven Atlantic nations can go as far in forming a federal union as the 13 American states did, he replied perhaps not quite that far to begin with, but he does think they might set up a common foreign policy, defense, currency, postal system, and trade relations. He said that he and other senators are convinced that a majority of the people are ready, if not for federal union, at least for something else beyond the Atlantic Pact, the Marshall Plan, and the piecemeal pouring out of money to European countries. The resolution has outside backing from the Atlantic Union Committee, whose officers include former Supreme Court Justice Roberts, former Secretary of War Patterson, and former Undersecretary of State Clayton. It is one of several pending resolutions designed to bring nations closer together to get a firmer grip on world peace, either by strengthening the United Nations or by other methods. Besides the Key Favor resolution, here are some of the other major resolutions now pending. One is a resolution by Senators Thomas of Utah and Douglas of Illinois to strengthen the United Nations by eliminating the veto power and setting up a method by which a victim of aggression may be defended by the collective power of the other countries. Number two is a one-paragraph resolution introduced by Senator Toby of New Hampshire for a group of 19 other senators designed to strengthen the United Nations and to seek its development into a world federation open to all nations with defined and limited powers adequate to preserve peace and prevent aggression through the enactment, interpretation, and enforcement of world law. One of the main differences between this and the Key Favor resolution is that the Toby Federation would be open to all nations, but the Key Favor Federal Union would be open only to democratic countries, starting with the 7 democracies that first sponsored the 12-nation Atlantic Pact. Other democracies could be invited to join by the original 7. The Toby resolution also has been introduced in the House, with a claimed support of more than 100 representatives, and it has the backing of the United World Federalists. And in the colorful little medieval city of Strasbourg, France, European Federation was given further impetus through the first meeting of the Council of Europe. The foreign ministers of Britain, France, Italy, Belgium, Holland, Luxembourg, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Ireland, the Charter Nation members, met today at the Strasbourg City Hall in a step toward a federated continent. The Council brings together, in the Committee of Ministers and the Assembly, half a dozen organizations that work for European unity, and individual leaders of almost every political caste, except the extremes of fascism and communism. The most colorful figure in the Assembly will be Britain's wartime leader, Winston Churchill, a post-war enthusiast for welding together the victor and the vanquished as one strong unit. Three of the most enthusiastic supporters of European Union are the foreign ministers of France, Italy, and Belgium. Norway also favors such a project. The chief decision facing the ministers today was the admission of Greece and Turkey to the Council, and an official British source said that this would be done speedily. Another official source said the ministers intend to lay down general principles of European cooperation and thus leave the Assembly wide initiative for detailed projects to carry out these ideas. This is Lester Smith substituting for Cedric Foster, reporting to you from Boston. I'll be back with you tomorrow at this same time.
Lester Smith, substituting for Cedric Foster, has been presented in his analysis of today's news from Boston. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.